Hello, everyone, and welcome to Connectivity episode 276. I'm your host, John Reardon, and I am joined today by a man who I wasn't sure if I would be joined by today, but he's here anyway, Neil Ronahan.
Yeah, I had a kid this week.
And he's already over it.
Yep.
It's moved on. back to Nintendo. So
It's the second one, doesn't really count.
Yeah, I mean,
Also, Alex DeFreitas is here.
Hi!
Who is backup host, and then regular host showed up. So,
yeah.
we got a full house today.
Yeah, if I disappear in a cloud of dust, it's because, I'm in a house of two sleeping children and hopefully a sleeping wife. If one of them wakes up, then I might have to go disappear.
Sounds fair.
But I'm hopeful, I'm optimistic, and then I will probably go take a nap and wake up whenever I need to, because I forgot about the whole like infant thing. They eat a lot and they don't really sleep for like longer than a couple hours at a time. At least like the toddler has the wherewithal to like, usually if he wakes up, it's just like once in the middle of the night, and then I can trick him into going back to bed and I can sneak out and do whatever I want to do, like sleep.
He's just gotta learn to not get back in that bed. It's always a trap.
Yep.
But we are going to talk about where we are as we're recording this. It is the Wednesday of E3.
Guys, E3
media week.
What's your favorite moment of the E3 so far?
Oh boy,
the Slack channel is honestly the best part.
Yeah,
I mean the dunks are the best part of E3 this year.
Okay, so some context. E3 obviously all online this year. And they are having, for this first week, it started Monday and goes for the rest of this week, they are having a media week. Now, you would expect, hearing that this would be a time that maybe media would get to try out some demos, get some early impressions.
I'm curious, does the E3 website even mention demos anymore? Because that was like, they were talking about this whole thing about like, you'll be able to play games and it'll be great. And I'm pretty sure that none of that is mentioned anywhere anymore.
No, and they also normally at E3, weeks in advance, you'd be registering for media and whatever, and you would get your media credentials and your information would go out to all the exhibitors, and then they would reach out to you and say, hey, let's schedule this appointment to try out a game, and you would do that, and you'd go into E3 with, you know, you're not just wandering the show floor, you're going to appointment after appointment after appointment, and that's how you do it. There was no scheduling for this E3, and the emails from the ESA, which is the company that runs E3, just said to DM these booths once Media Week starts and set up appointments. So we did that. We DM'd every booth that had even a loose tie to Nintendo or we thought might make a Nintendo game, and expressed interest in meeting with them. And thus far, we have heard back from one of them, but they just emailed us. It wasn't through the E3 portal.
And that's the thing, is like, I've seen, and like, definitely got some jadedness here. I guess you could say good fortune or right timing. Like E3's a lot of work. Like happy, enjoyed my time. I got to go to six in a row from 2009 to 2015. Like really memorable experiences, met a lot of people, made a lot of connections, all that jazz. A lot of work. Like that's the thing that when people get whimsical about E3, it's usually because you're not thinking about the fact that like, oh yeah, that was the day that like I was uploading video until 2 or 3 in the morning, and then I passed out and woke up at 6, went to the diner in the downstairs in the hotel and shoveled whatever food I could in my mouth, and then because I knew I wasn't going to eat for the rest of the day or until like 9 o'clock. Like that's the pure E3 experience. But I've seen a lot of people, just because of the virtual nature, that like a lot more people are getting accepted as press, and it's a lot of people's first time getting accepted as E3 press.
Yeah,
and even to that extent, which it's really cool. Like it's definitely, like, I need to emphasize that as I come in here with some jaded, like, what's the point of this? But the thing that, like, really sucks about this virtual booth experience is that it's bad for everybody. There's I'm still waiting for there to be some kind of useful nature to anything in here. Because, like,
anything to happen. There's nothing there.
if you're coming to this and you're like, okay, like it's Brad's Nintendo blog and you got accepted as press for into E3, like that's wonderful. What the hell are you doing here? Like what? Because are you going to message Nintendo? You can't even message Nintendo.
No, their DMs Nintendo, are closed.
Yeah, like that. And like that's I mean, that was the kind of thing that like E3 was selling, the fact of if you could come here, you're going to be able to like make these connections. And there's absolutely none of that. I believe that there's a feature where you can like submit your business card, which is just basically like sending your scary avatar to somebody with like an email address. And it doesn't seem like it even works.
Yeah, there have
or
been
at least it didn't.
So there's a forum section to this E3 portal. And on like Tuesday, there were devs in there or exhibitors in there saying, hey, has anybody got a business card yet? Because we, you know, they were saying that they hadn't, and that they had tried like sending one from their own account to themselves and it had never shown up. And so it doesn't seem like the business card thing works. And there's a messaging system which you're supposed to use to talk to these booths. But it doesn't seem to, there doesn't seem to be a notification system. So you have to like go to a person's profile to see messages that they've sent you. It won't appear in the message section. So I don't know how any booth would ever, they'd have to just click their way through every person, I guess, to hopefully find someone who messaged them. But it's, yeah, I mean, we've said it before, but like the expectation was not high for this thing. But wow, this is bad.
Yeah, like I don't know what the use of any of this portal is. Like, it's
no,
why is there an app? And I think the reason why there's an app is
I haven't got the ESA, app to work.
It's so the ESA can say that they have an app. Like that's all it is. Like this is honestly
the Nintendo app works better.
I mean, that's
wow,
it's sad reality.
Yeah,
I think it's like I mean, I guess having experience with E3 and knowing the industry a little bit, like have a little bit more experience with the people who put on E3, the ESA, mm-hmm. What is it, the Electronic Software Association. I don't have the history off the top of my dome. They've been around for a while, and they've been putting on E3 since I think 1995 was the first one. And there's been a lot of ups and downs with E3 that I feel like people kind of forget about, like E3 2006, which was the one where the Wii was at, which was apparently like it was insanely packed, but it was also like it was probably peak E3 in a way, and that like it was ridiculous. Everybody was there, nonstop parties, that kind of jazz. Like I think we were freshly christened Nintendo World Report after being playing at GameCube for a handful of years. When we went to that E3, I think we rolled with like 25 people, and Jeez. There was a reason for that. Like that's, it was needed, to have that many people at E3. And then the bottom dropped out. I forget exactly why, but the 2007 and 2008 for E3 were basically just like ghosts. 2007 was just a bunch of hotels in, Santa Monica, California, where like it was just around that area, and
as opposed to the convention center.
Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Santa Monica is also farther away from LA proper.
Right. I just mean they didn't rent out the convention center that we think of as E3.
Yeah. And like the Santa Monica, like the pier is real fun. I was there for an Activision event, like several lifetimes ago, back when Activision like made, there was a Call of Duty thing there. But when they made games other than Call of Duty, but like it was just people going from hotel room to hotel room, and apparently that was hell for media because it just involved like going across town in California in June. And then 2008 went back to the convention center, but I think it was only one hall, and it really was. And I think there was some weird stuff with that one too, as far as exactly how it was set up. It was like really small. Then 2009 it kind of went back to normal, but a lot of all that stuff that happened is it's just the ESA trying to figure out ways to like get money. To get investors, to get people interested in what they're doing. And a lot of the things that the ESA seems to be doing with this virtual E3 is so that way they don't die. They don't want E3 to go away. Yeah. They want E3 to be a brand. They want it to be recognized. And that's why I think they kind of realized, especially after, I mean, they never really apologized or admitted fault for anything that happened with the media information breach of the leak. In 2019, 2020, 2020, it didn't happen because of COVID. So yeah. They had to do something for this year, or else it probably would have just gone away. And once they didn't have the opportunity, they couldn't do the convention in California and in Los Angeles. It was basically like the I forget what the exact status is of you know the LA Convention Center, but I know as of March they basically said like no, like those events aren't happening. Mm-hmm. So they had to do something. And what's really disappointing is that like they had 15 months of warning of this happening, that they could have, even if they wound up being able to do an in-person event right now in LA, they could have prepared to actually have something worthwhile. And instead what they have is just a shell of a concept that doesn't even function and do anything for anyone. And their media week is just a beta test, and they have Twitch,
and not a
Twitch
successful
shows.
Like it doesn't work.
Like, yeah, and like that's the thing is, and you know what's, and the shitty thing is that like it's probably going to get forgotten, because I think that the actual lineup of things that's happening, starting, I mean, basically, I think was it Friday? Friday is when things start cooking. I mean, we've already had some events that are kind of like part of the season. But like E3 proper, I think the first day is Friday or Saturday, as far as like when they're like doing like their Twitch shows or whatever. But like, there's going to be good shit there. Like, I mean, Microsoft is going to have a show. There will be a Nintendo Direct on June 15th. Right.
There's going to be 4 hours of Nintendo streaming.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's good.
Yeah. And there's like a Capcom show, Square Enix. I'm really excited for the Square Enix one. As long as they haven't really mentioned anything about like the Japanese side of Square. I hope that's, it's not a ominous, because sorry, Eidos, I don't care as much. I guess the Guardians of the Galaxy game might be fun, but like, where's my Final Fantasy shit on Switch? That's what I want.
Project Silphied is just around the corner. Any day now.
But that's my big long rant about E3, because it is an event that I have a lot of wonderful memories from, and it would be cool if it didn't just die in shame. But that's what it looks like.
If this is what it's going to be, then it deserves to die.
So as a first timer, as far as covering E3, I have a lot of like questions going into it, as well as trying to understand why it's dying at this point. So I'm just gonna shoot some questions. I guess I'll just start with, what is the ESA, and like why aren't video game companies engaging with them anymore? Like, is the ESA dropping the ball, or are video game companies just like finding other avenues and they don't need the ESA anymore?
So I wanted to also just the ESA from Wikipedia, all of our resources. I just wanted to get some of the early history down.
Sure.
Trade Association of the Video Game Industry in the U.S. It was formed in 1994. It was originally called the IDSA, which, you know, good change. Interactive Digital Software Association is what it was called originally. And it's basically, I mean, like, trade association is it's all the companies that operate in America. And I guess it kind of expanded a little bit, because E3 is an international show, although you can say companies like Nintendo, they have an American subsidiary. Basically all of these companies do. And with that, it's basically like they're kind of, I guess, in a way, lobbying for video games. I know some of it came out of, I think I want to say, let me glance on Wikipedia. this all did come out. Like I had a feeling this all came out of the Mortal Kombat and Night Trap court hearings, where basically video games needed lobbyists for to stand up to the asshole Joe Lieberman, who was trying to just like attack Mortal Kombat, because it seemed like easy prey. So like a lot of those companies kind of banded together, and the ESA represented them in these things. And I think at that point in the 90s, there were a lot of successes. The industry was booming, so there wasn't a lot to be concerned of with the ESA. And I think over the years, as far as why companies are kind of breaking from them, like why EA, although I think EA is still a member, and I think Sony is even still a member, they just stopped viewing the ESA's landmark event, E3, as relevant or as needed. And I think EA and Sony, and I think Take-Two, I think they are out of the ESA.
Whereas Take-Two has a show, don't they?
I don't think they do. but they also they make
I'm 2K.
Take-Two and 2K are the same company. I believe the way it works is that Take-Two is the parent company, 2K is underneath them, and like Rockstar Games is under Take-Two but separate from 2K. Will admit that the naming schemes of this company are super dumb.
Yes.
But it's if you were to say 2K, that technically does not include Rockstar, where if you're talking about Take-Two and how they don't need the ESA, they don't need the ESA because Grand Theft Auto Online still makes like millions upon millions of dollars every day. Like,
so that's for clarity, Take-Two does have a stream during this, just for
They do.
Yep.
All right. Maybe it's Rockstar isn't a part of it anymore.
Well, Rockstar is part of 2K. Activision, I don't think, has anything.
Well, BlizzCon is its own thing.
Yeah.
But that's mostly for Blizzard.
Okay. So when I referenced all the hubbub after E3 2006, that was when a lot of companies kind of broke away. Listed here are Activision, LucasArts, id Software. So that was part of the reason why 2000 and 2008 were not really much of anything in comparison, because a lot of people kind of left. And I think some of those companies did come back. And there's like charter member fees that get into this, which I see a lot of people wondering, like, why is Nintendo being beholden to the ESA? I mean, there is the joke that like the what pictures did the ESA have of Nintendo? is this why Reggie retired? Like, I mean, that's not the case. Probably what it is that Nintendo has a relationship with the ESA where they rely on them for lobbying and for other aspects of working with retailers and retail partnerships. So there's a vested interest in companies that are heavily invested with the ESA to do something with them and play by those rules a little bit, especially when you're paying this company a lot of money to be a member of it. Now, at the outcome of this, maybe there's a chance that a lot of these companies are like, well, this wasn't worth it.
Nintendo hasn't needed E3 as an event ever since they started doing Nintendo Directs.
I think there's a level of agree to disagree, because
there's the physical presence of like having the press people play things, but even then, Treehouse Live, they're essentially making their own press coverage.
I will say that I don't think, I mean, you can probably look at it. I think a lot of those Treehouse Lives do the best when they're at E3. If someone wants to, if I am inaccurate in that, feel free to correct me if I'm wrong.
No, I think you're right.
I don't know. Show me the stats on Bakugan. But like, I think there is something for getting everybody together to kind of do things in like the same time frame. Which is, I mean, right now we have like 15 different things doing that. And like, really, June is still news. And I think even if it's Jeff Keighley's game show or whatever, people are probably going to just attribute it to E3, which is probably going to piss off people that are both a part of E3 and not a part of E3, because mm-hmm. E3 is going to be like, well, that's not us. We want it to be E3 branded in the ESA. And like, Jeff Keighley's probably going to be like, well, screw E3. I'm out. I want to have my own thing. But I do, I mean, like, I do think that there's a value to having an event like E3, but I think the problem is that for a long time, the ESA has needed to rethink what that is. And they don't really seem to have an idea for what that possibly could be. Cause there was that whole thing for E3, 2020, where I think they were going to do this thing where it was going to be like, instead of booths, they were going to be like experiences. And you could walk around and there would be people on a stage doing things and streaming. Because they welcomed the public. I think the public, 2017, I think, is when that happened.
Yeah, in 2015, they gave away like 1,000 tickets or something. And that was, I feel like that was the start of it. And then, 2016, 2017, at some point in there, they just opened it up to like, you can buy tickets. That's when it felt like it changed from like there was more of like a business side to E3. And then it changed into more of a traditional con, but also never made a very apt change into a traditional con. Like it wanted to be that, but didn't seem to make the changes necessary to do that. And it was just a, just a mess. Like, they'd give media, what, like an hour before one day? And there's all you need. Now we get a week, so I guess I shouldn't be complaining. I get a whole week to experience all the empty virtual booths.
Do you have any idea, like, whether this problem is just E3? Like, what's the state of Gamescom or TGS? Are those still relevant?
I don't know enough about the politics behind those to like, I mean, stuff like PAX here in the States seems fine.
Yeah, but those are more like true cons where it's not really a trade show or an industry event as much as like a fan event.
See, it may be that because of this new thing called the internet, trade shows as a thing may not be entirely necessary.
Right.
Because I don't need to gather a bunch of media around to tell them about my new thing. I can just make a YouTube video about it. And then I can just email it to those same media people, like, and they'll share the YouTube video. Like, it just, I don't know. And I think that's the reason that E3 kind of has tried to make this change to a more public facing con type thing, is I think they know that a trade show isn't really a thing that anyone needs anymore.
So what's the future? How do they fix this sinking ship?
I don't think they do.
Okay, so they just
die. I think E3 was always dying. Mm-hmm. I think 2020 was, they were dying, and then 2020 came in with a shotgun and just hit them right in the chest.
Like, and there's also the thing that E3 in the 90s was a lot about, as being a trade association, it was about having like people from stores. Yeah. That used to be the thing, is that like you either could be media or you could be like, you work at a GameStop and you can apply to be industry and get to go to E3 and see all the glories, get all the swag. Like that used to be, those were the ways to get an E3 back in the day. It was find some 2-bit blog like Nintendo World Report, work for GameStop or Game Crazy or whatever. Mm-hmm. Because it was about like seeing what was coming out that holiday and then retailers getting their orders in.
Yep.
So there were like a lot of people from like, you know, Target and Best Buy and Toys R Us. They would have appointments with companies that would be from the retail perspective. And you still see shows like that happen. Like there's still the GameStop Managers Conference happens every year. And that serves the same purpose.
Right. Those things still exist. We just don't, we're not covering them.
Yeah. Like there's not the mix of the media and the retailers. And I think that that's another big part of E3 kind of disappearing, is that like that hasn't been needed. So E3 has been trying to figure out what is it. And I think a lot of companies have kind of realized over the years that like doing the traditional, like let's pour all this money into a outrageous booth, like the ROI on that just isn't that good. And I think I made the comment earlier about how, like John, you said, like Nintendo doesn't need it. They do Nintendo Directs, but I think that what Nintendo does with their E3 booths, especially, I mean, thinking back the past couple of years, like how they had the Breath of the Wild one with all the cool stuff there, Smash Brothers, Odyssey, what they do in 2019, besides taking everybody's information, was that Sword and Shield? Yeah, that would have been Sword and Shield. Animal Crossing was another one that would have been then. They had Luigi's Mansion stuff there too.
Was that the one where you had to wait in line and play everything in a very specific order?
I think so.
Or that Link's Awakening in that one too?
Yeah, Link's Awakening would have been there too. But I think they had like, if, as far as their booth design, like the Zelda one was super cool. I regret not going to that one because that seemed really cool, but their booth was essentially just Breath of the Wild, which, you know, it's really cool. There were a lot of places to play Breath of the Wild there, and that was a super impactful game. And I think that also speaks to the fact of why Nintendo focusing on one game was really smart, because you think about all of the buzz that Breath of the Wild got that year, and all of the buzz that Super Mario Odyssey got in 2017 and Smash Brothers in 2018. And I think part of the reason why 2019 probably isn't as memorable is because they didn't have that singular game that was the focus of their booth. They had, I think they had some Luigi's Mansion stuff. I think they had some Pokemon stuff. And I think even in 2017 or 18, I think they also had Pokemon Let's Go. I guess it would have been 2018. Is that? Yeah, that's when Let's Go came out. But the way that Nintendo focuses on one game and a lot of other companies do, like, it kind of just narrows the focus more. And I think those companies have seen just greater success from that. Because mm-hmm. part of what I loved about E3 when I went is, like, going to the Nintendo booth and just, like, they would be dozens upon dozens of games that you could play. It would range, like, I think about, like, 2009, like, they had playable New Super Mario Brothers. Wii was a big announcement. Wii Sports Resort. What else was Wii Fit Plus? There were probably some other things there too. But then they also had stuff like they had some WiiWare games. I think that's where I first played the game Nyx Quest, which is pretty cool. And then Line Attack Heroes, which never came out in America. And I think E3 2009 was also where there was a trailer for a game called Monado: Beginning of the New World. Hey. I don't know whatever happened to that, but it wasn't playable.
It did, they had a trailer. It did very well on Amazon pre-orders, I know.
But you had all these other games and you could be able to just find secrets. I think E3 2009 was the year that in Warner Brothers booth, they had like a kiosk or two for this little game called Scribblenauts. And that was the kind of thing that like, people would just be excitedly talking to each other about the show. It'd be like, oh, you have to go check out Scribblenauts. It's amazing. And that kind of stuff doesn't seem to happen as much in modern E3 because all the focuses are on one game. Like even Sony used to have stuff where, like, I remember because their booth would always be next to Nintendo's for a long time. They used to have it where it would be like, oh, you can go here and here's just like a bunch of like indie and third party partner stuff or like for Vita. And there would just be like, you know, 20 different kiosks with, you know, maybe it's like 10 different games across all these kiosks, and it would just be so cool to see what was there and who was there and stuff like that. And that all kind of went away because I think all these companies realized that you're better off just focusing, putting all your resources into one or two games. And I think that also extends to where the first party companies are kind of going. I mean, I guess Microsoft in a different way, but even with Microsoft, there's like a focus on like kind of like a mess of low key games, and then it's like Halo and Forza and Gears. Sony's been their first party studio is just engineered to do hits. They are systematically removing smaller titles. Like they want megaton hits. Yep. And Nintendo's even outputting less games than before for a variety of reasons. But I think some of that is that they probably see more success by focusing on a tentpole as opposed to being like, here's five games.
Yeah, no, it's not sustainable. Like three companies having, well, not even three because Sony's not there. We're not going to keep having E3s so that Microsoft and Nintendo can each show one game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
I mean, there's definitely a benefit to having a week of video games blowout where it's just like all these new announcements and the entire world is paying attention to the world of video games. You know, outside of like just the game enthusiasts, like even larger outlets will cover E3.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, and it brings like eyes to what Nintendo's doing, what Sony's doing, what Xbox is doing, but also like what these smaller projects are, because since everybody's paying attention, you can have a smaller project, you know, get some traction.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm concerned about losing more than E3 itself. And because it's like, it seems like all these different little events are still happening, but they're kind of dotted throughout the month rather than just like just this weekend or just this week.
So I will point out Nintendo's direct from E3 2019 has 3.9 million views. Their direct from February, which obviously has been online for significantly less time, has 2.4 million views. So I don't know. Like there's definitely putting everything together. Like, yeah, you're going to get some crossover, like, you know, oh, maybe the Microsoft people will hang around for the Nintendo thing or whatever. I don't know how much you're actually getting out of that.
So I would also point out that with a lot of the stuff during E3, people are probably watching them in other in other ways. A lot of these things are kind of cross broadcast. I went and looked for the September 4th, 2019 Nintendo Direct, and Nintendo's views for it has 2.8 million, 2.7.
So that's a pretty similar.
Yeah.
No,
but I think it is hard. Like, I think here I'm going to just on Google Nintendo E3 Direct 2019, and you have Nintendo's, that's 2018, people doing reactions, Nintendo France uploading it. The IGN just has the full direct.
That's also true of the non E3 directs. Like, those are broadcast in a lot of different places as well.
I don't think in E3, I think it's slightly different. Just using the example as IGN, I don't think IGN has their own like presentation of a Nintendo, like the Nintendo Directs in February, while they do for E3.
They didn't rebroadcast? They didn't mirror it?
I don't think so.
Okay. That surprises me. But,
which I think some of that might have to do with Nintendo playing under the ESA policies as opposed to their own.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we've rebroadcast their directs before.
Yeah, it looks like, I mean, yeah, just using specifically for the year 2019, it looks like IGN only rebroadcasted the E3 Direct and not any other ones.
Interesting.
I just searched Nintendo Direct 2019 IGN. It's maybe there's more to it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But it is, I mean, you eventize everything. And I think there is the difference of having, you know, quote unquote gamer Christmas with E3 versus on a random Wednesday in February, Nintendo is just like, here's a bunch of games.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I would argue that I think E3 2021 is way closer to on a random Wednesday in June, here's a bunch of games.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Well, you don't have, I mean, you were talking about like the, you know, the massive hype around Breath of the Wild because of all the media and people playing it at the event. That would sure be a great thing to have during Media Week. But like, there's none of that. It is just a Nintendo Direct.
The thing that I realized is that Media Week is just a beta.
Yeah.
Like that's, they even basically said as much. They're like, oh, we're working out the kinks. And I think they might have planned it where they had this media week, and it was basically so that way they could get a smaller amount of people in the environment, making sure they had the server load for it and see if there were any other issues. Turns out there's a lot of issues.
Though I don't
see a world where this is better next week, but
well, and why is it not just a stream on YouTube?
I don't know.
Why is
I
it
wish I had an
this...
answer for you.
Like, we don't need a beta, just you set a premiere, like have it pre-recorded now. You set the premiere for when the thing starts and you hit go. Like, you don't need a dedicated web portal that doesn't work. I still can't get into the app and we're on day 3.
Yeah.
So.
No, it's terrible.
It really is. But let's move on to a separate subtopic, which, Neil, you brought up before we started.
So I, my kid was born the morning before the virtual booths opened up and made all our greatest fears realized about how dumb this E3 was going to be. And I was thinking, as I was thinking about whether or not I was going to be able to record the show, was if I were to tell my two sons when they're older, they're like, you know, Papa, what's E3? Because I don't think it's going to be around. I think. Maybe when my oldest turns 10, E3 might have just died. I think that's optimistic. Very optimistic.
Yeah.
Still 7 years to go. But like it is like what's the defining thing of E3? And I guess like Alex, you were saying about how you don't have as much experience with it, just being kind of newer to paying attention to some of the nitty gritty of the industry. So I guess with that, like, do you have a vision of what E3 is from not being someone that I guess I've kind of been aware of E3 for 20 years about that. Like, I think I remember like E3 2001 might've been the first one that I was like really aware of.
Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, E3 was really just the press conferences that I would watch online where they would all like, they would announce all the cool stuff. And then, you know, gradually I learned that, you know, it's more of a, trade show event where like they'll have the press conferences, but then afterwards people from the media will go and actually play the games, interview people. It's this big old blowout. I knew about retailers also being a part of it, but that was pretty much just the extent of my knowledge. I guess a question I've always had is like, why E3 and why in America is this the place that like all this is happening? Because growing up,
American like, video games, American exceptionalism. That's the answer.
Mm-hmm. This is the greatest country on earth. Don't you forget
but all,
it.
All the cool video games I like are from Japan. Why don't they have like? I mean, well, they have TGS, like, but it's also not like the bigger one.
I was going to say Tokyo Game Show has also kind of gone down over the years, but that was also because a lot of the focus of the video game industry, and you could even see by the fact of Microsoft not really doing anything there, and Sony ostensibly moving their focus to the West. Japan isn't the center of the video game universe anymore.
That's true.
I mean, if you do like Gamescom, which is held in Germany, that has its problems too. But like, that's actually successful. Like, and that seems like, or really, I guess, sustainable might be the thing with Gamescom. Is that it is something that gets very crowded, but I believe they do have like very clearly defined media days, and even like I think media parts of the convention center. And I think some of that also has to do is I think the Gamescom convention center has more space than the LA one. I think that's where you run into some limitations. It's something that, like, for example, PAX West, which is out in Seattle, that basically grew to a point where there is no convention center that can hold it in Seattle. So it's in this convention center, and like, I haven't actually been to it, but I've helped plan appointments for it. And you'll just have like, oh, we're on the sixth floor of the Marriott next to the hotel, and that is something that is very consistent because the convention center does not have the space to hold everything. So it is just like move to like conference rooms at every nearby hotel, which is something that I see at like, I mean, even in E3 or a PAX East, I'll still see it where it's like, oh, like, yeah, we're at this hotel, a block or two away. So you have to like leave the convention center and go there for the event. Usually those events rule because like you get to leave the convention center, sit on like a, like, I don't know. I've had ones where I've just straight up just sat on a bed and played a video game. It's great.
That's what the Crash Team Racing stuff at PAX East was, just in a very small hotel room. So it's just get on this bed with a bunch of strangers and play Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, Activision has been ahead of the curve of just getting out of Dodge with E3.
Yeah.
And I feel like that might even, like, my experience with Activision events at E3s might give a good window into what the hell E3, like, I guess where like some of the failings and we can hate on Activision for making everything Call of Duty. However, they are a very shrewd and smart company when it comes to like being profitable. So they, I think it was E3 2009. They had a relatively like standard booth. I think I like played a demo for Tony Hawk Ride there. They didn't have a lot of like, you know, Wii stuff on the show floor, I don't think. But then I think it was 2010 or 2011, where I think it was 2010. They didn't have a booth. Instead, they invited a buttload of the media to the Staples Center, where, you know, like the Los Angeles Lakers and Clippers play and everything. That's it, it, this is like the Staples Center is right next to the LA Convention Center, sports arena. They invited people to that and just put on a show that had like very loose connections to E3 in general, but they were all like tied into different games. And here's just from memory who was there: Eminem, Rihanna, Will.i.am, I think Pharrell was there, Tool, like in orchestra. Tony Hawk was supposed to do some tricks in the Staples Center, but like the ramp didn't work, so he just came out on stage and was like, yo, what's up, and left. They had like this ridiculous pole dancer for like the game that I think eventually became Sleeping Dogs. Like it was a fever dream of an event that like had an absolutely stacked, ridiculous, star-studded cast. And I don't know for sure if this is the case, but I wouldn't be surprised if Activision, who didn't have a booth at that E3, they probably saved money by putting on that, renting out the Staples Center for a night, getting Eminem, Rihanna, like Tool and whoever else to be there, they probably saved money than getting a booth and staffing it for 3 days at E3.
Yeah.
Then there are other years, their booth would largely just be a giant screen for people to watch trailers at. And then they would have a pretty decent, like, behind closed doors, like, go there and, you know, get your demo for a Skylanders game. Because that was basically all I did at Activision events. And they would always be the good events to go to because you would be in, like, an air-conditioned thing on the show floor. Sometimes, if you time yours around lunchtime, you might be able to get, like, a slice of pizza or something.
I just remember going into the Skylander Superchargers one, and they were all, you and me were like the only people in there, and they couldn't figure out why their Wii U's kept turning off, and so we went in and turned off the auto shutdown on all their Wii U's for them. And that was the day we became deeply ingratiated with Activision from then on.
Yeah. No, I mean, like, that's,
and now they send you cookies.
Yep, yeah, Christmas cards every year.
I did get Crash Bandicoot cookies from Activision. That's true. No, I mean, like, it's always that hard line of just, like, working with PR and video games, which I guess is, you know, beyond E3, but also very much a part of E3, is that, like, I absolutely, like, if Activision does a bad thing, like, I don't know, turn Vicarious Visions into Blizzard, or take Toys from Bob away from making creative games and putting them on the Call of Duty. Not saying that Call of Duty isn't creative, but I imagine that Toys for Bob's work on Call of Duty is not going to be creative.
I do look forward to seeing a Toys for Bob logo slowly fade up over a Hans Zimmer score at the beginning of a Call of Duty game. That could be great.
But my big thing is that, like if PR people are good at their job, then it should be very easy to work with them. And that's one thing that I'll give Activision PR over I guess at this point, I've worked with Activision PR for 13 years, is that, like, they are extremely easy and friendly to work with and are the kind of people that are going to be, I mean, of course, like, when, yeah, like, I was not bought off with Skylanders. Those games freaking slap. I love them. they're incredible. But, like, yeah, they recognize that, like, oh, look at this rube at Nintendo World Reports given Skylanders Spyro's Adventure a 9 out of 10. Let's make sure to include him on every Skylanders press release and event. Yeah, that did happen. And there were years where I was kinder to Skylanders, more kind than others. That's the way it works. I mean, I think they're overall very well-made games. It's just that balance of, you know, working with a PR rep and knowing when they're trying to fleece you.
Sure.
Because they will always, like, sweet talking happens, man.
It's their job.
Yep. And it's us, our job as members of the gaming press, gaming journalists, whatever you want to call us or not call us, to be able to see through the bullshit and deliver stuff as plainly as we can.
How much swag do you need to get before, like, your reputation is tarnished? That's the real question.
If you are walking around from appointment to appointment and you just have a giant swag bag filled with crap, you should not be media.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Don't get me wrong. Like I might have some of it visible from my desk of stuff that I have over the years. Like, I've got, you know, I can see it's over on my bookshelf. I have, like, a Mario anniversary pin that I got from a Nintendo booth. And I have some other stuff that I've kept over the years. There was the one, it was funny. One year, I think it was for, might have been the first Epic Mickey, because I think Disney was basically out of video games by the time Epic Mickey 2 came out.
Mm-hmm.
You could get your own mouse ears with, like, and they had, like, a thing where you could, like, stitch in the lettering. And if you wanted those, you would basically have to wait all day to get them. And people did it. And it is one of those things where I'm like, how are you media? But
right.
I will tell you that that came out in, what, 2010 or 11? That was the late Wii era when there were basically three companies making Wii games. I'm relatively certain there were a handful of people from Nintendo World Report that on the last day of E3 were just like, well, we don't have anything else to do. I'm going to get me some mouse ears. And I see nothing wrong with that because there wasn't a lot to cover with Nintendo stuff.
Were they
free?
It was
dark, man. Yeah, like, no, it was free.
Okay, those things are sold for like $50 at Disney World. So that's a great deal.
Yeah,
I'd wait all day too.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of anything else cool that I've gotten over there. I mean, you would have the stuff where, like, they would give out exclusive Skylanders and that shit would be listed while people were, like, in the booth.
Yeah.
And, like, that was effed up. Like, I mean, yeah, there's so much swag, and it's basically seeing through, I guess, like, you know, there's some stuff that's good, and I know you have your Justin Berubis of the world that, like, mm-hmm. want it for collection purposes, and I mean, people like me who will, like, oh, yeah, like, yeah, I remember, yeah, I have a t-shirt that I got at E3, and it's cool to have it. I used to have an E3 polo that I got at my first one, that now I'd be very mad at having that after seeing what E3 has become.
Yeah. I think all I have are the Star Fox pins. I have a few.
Yeah, yeah, I have those, too.
I think that's the only swag I ever got. Maybe a bag? No, I got the bag at PAX. That was like, you went to the Nintendo booth at PAX and showed them that you had the Nintendo app on your phone.
Yeah.
And they were like, sweet, here's a bag.
They kind of stopped doing that because, like, they'd basically just run out of stuff instantly.
Yeah.
It's,
well, that's what media, that's what the media hour is for, is getting your swag before the plebs get in there.
I mean, like, it's the weird thing about covering Nintendo during the era of Wii U and 3DS. While I love my 3DS dearly, and Wii U even, you know, affectionate in a like, oh, you did poorly, but I don't know, you did have a cool Star Fox game. but like, I just remember there were years, like whether it was going to PAX East or E3, where it'd be like, I think I literally played every game that I had to, and it was like a day into the event.
Yeah.
And I'm like, there are two more days. We have some appointments, but like, I already played those demos because there are 15 Nintendo games to play in this entire convention hall.
That's what the Xbox booth is for.
Yeah. Yeah. I know there was the one E3 year where I think it was when Xbox One was it the year it was coming out. Like, I remember I played like the Ori demo, Rare Replay. Like, that was fun because I just had time because they're, Nintendo didn't have a lot in the Wii U era. And there were PAX East years where I'd just be like playing tabletop games because I'd just disappear. Like, all right, I'm going to go play Affordable Space Adventures for a demo. And then come back and like look, like walk around the indie booths and be like, no one's making anything for any Nintendo systems.
Yeah.
Like, I'll play this demo for a game that I think is cool, but like, I don't know why, at least for media purposes.
Well, E3 is dead. The end.
Yeah. Yeah. If I did have to call out some significant moments, like there is that, I feel like Alex, you were kind of hinting at, like, there was a time where E3 switched over from being like this down home friendly event, which if you look at, we have some of it up on YouTube from E3 2001, 2002. Like the press conference from 2001 is wild to watch.
Yeah.
Like they're not even on a stage. It's just like in a hotel conference room. And then by the end of it, like Nintendo's like, it's like a full theatrical production.
Yeah.
And I mean, all of the companies had full theatrical productions at a certain point. I mean, like Sony just had like a live orchestra for a couple. But
memorable they actually moments. Let like Iwata and Miyamoto come out and speak English.
Yeah.
Without worrying that they were going to like give away a great idea for a new game.
Yeah. Memorable moments. E3 2004. Like absolute legendary, and I get people. You can dunk on the journalists cheering and how it's bad or whatever. The Twilight Princess trailer reveal is the shit of legend. as a 16-year-old paying attention, probably looking up a trailer on like I don't know Flash or whatever, downloading a QuickTime video during my computer lab class. I like watching that Twilight Princess trailer and finding out about it. Like it's incredible. And watching that moment where they unveil it and the crowd reaction, like it's super cool. Reggie coming out after that and essentially ushering in like the Iwata Reggie era of Nintendo with a bang. And you wouldn't necessarily see the fruits of those labors until the DS came out later that year and started their kind of victory lap. But like that was an announcement of an era of Nintendo.
Yeah, I got that trailer on a DVD that came with a Nintendo Power.
Yeah,
and just watched it over and over and over again.
That's
every 3D Zelda trailer is like a monumental point.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
In E3 history.
I guess personal history. Because then I mean after that, like the Wii one, the year with the Wii 2006 was huge. That was where Radio Free Nintendo was birthed, I believe. Mike Sklenz and Evan Birchfield like basically yelling at each other during the week of E3, and I think they just were like, why don't you guys record this, and then they did. And that's what started Radio Free Nintendo. But I went mm-hmm. to E3 2009 for the first time. And I mean, that was back when when we used to get into the Nintendo of Europe parties, which I think we did in 2009 and 2010. 2010 was when I got my first picture with Tezuka, Takashi Tezuka, who's like, you know, the guy who Miyamoto's right-hand man during the 80s. I got to interview him 1 year, but then I realized that I had two identical pictures with him, one from 2010 and one from 2015, where it's just both of us being slightly awkward and putting up a thumbs up. But it's just nice. the pictures are the same, except for like my facial hair is different. Like so that's why I always joke that I'd go to E3 2020 and complete the Trinity, but then it didn't happen. So that made me sad.
The universe did it for your own good. Oh, thank God.
Yeah. The nonsense reveal of the Wii U in E3 2011. That's definitely a moment, because that ushered in a shitty era of Nintendo.
Yeah. Nintendo Land fireworks.
I think Nintendo Land fireworks was the year after. It was when it was.
Oh, yeah.
It was E3 2011 was when they had like the Wii U game concepts or whatever. They didn't have any officially announced.
Was that
games.
The one with like the HD Zelda where it's like,
yes.
Yeah,
walking. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Oh, that blew my mind.
That was when like Reggie was just like, this will make you think of a utopia. It'll be about you and me. We'll call it Wii U.
Quote is utopian, unifying, unique, which should have been on the goddamn box. That would have made it sell.
Wouldn't have.
What a great that's on our Wii eulogy.
Wii eulogy.
That's the end screen of that is just the utopian, unifying, unique.
Yeah, like they certainly tried.
It's the greatest tagline.
Like other good memories. I mean, that's and I'm focusing just on like announcement stuff because all the countless memories with Nintendo World Report staffers from 2009 to 2015 are priceless. Made friendships. Met some jagoff called John Raridan. 1 year. But then we geeked out about Star Fox together, so it worked
and I
out.
Slept on your floor.
You did,
because I was the new guy, so I didn't get a bed.
Yeah. Was there a bed in that room or no?
Well, you had the bed, but like we weren't close enough yet to share a bed. Yeah. If we went now, it'd be fine.
Yeah, no, it'd be no problem. I'm trying to think of because it was E3 2014. Nintendo used to do these things where they would have like after hours like roundtables, which they were always referred to as like developer roundtables, but they weren't really roundtables. It was like you were in like a classroom. On like the second floor of the convention center that would kind of like go down and there would be, you know, Nintendo developers kind of going deeper into a game. And then at the end, there would be some opportunity for Q&A. There was one that I think it was TYP and I were doing a live blog for Sakurai talking about Smash Brothers and Wii U and 3DS. And I think it brought down the website because we were the only people reporting on it while we were there. I think because Aaron Kalutzka might have had like a Wi-Fi hotspot or something that worked because the internet was bad in that room. But that was cool. And just, I mean, a lot of those moments of just kind of, you know, stumbling into something that you didn't expect or being able to get an opportunity, like some stuff that I won't reveal of like seeing people asleep on the show floor and being like, just like
Jared
stuff
plugging
like,
Elgatos into random TVs he wasn't supposed to plug
yeah,
Elgatos into.
I will
into.
Say, if you want to know the absolute MVP of E3 for Nintendo World Report in the past decade, it is Jared Rosenberg.
Uh-huh. I will never forget him pulling me, because E3 2015, like, I started on the site at the end of 2014, so I was fresh-faced and new, and Jared pulling me aside at E3 and just be like, so whenever you get to a booth, just go ahead and walk up and plug your Elgato in. And if they stop you, you just go, oh, sorry, and move on. But, like, they might not stop you. And just being like, is that okay? And him being like, and, like, I remember then getting there and they hand us the like, filming guidelines. And Jared just, like, crumpling up and throwing it away. And just going like, they never gave us that. Just the most. Like... But then he has stuff where they've had to like tell, and I won't say specifics, but there have been instances where you know they've had to contact us afterward and be like, we weren't supposed to let you get that. And it's great.
That's funny.
Yeah.
Is that the reason why we have the valuable, treasured Paper Mario 3DS footage?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's
true, actually.
Yeah. I think that is because that was for E3 2010. Yeah. E3 mm-hmm. 2010 is when they announced the 3DS. And they basically had like a section of their booth that you had to wait on a very long line for because the 3DS was very popular. And there, it was just like this, like, I don't know, circular area with a bunch of 3DS units that had a bunch of games that just never came out. Like there was the original form of Paper Mario.
And they were just like trailers, partners. Right? They weren't games.
Some of them were demos. Like I think there was like a Pilot Wings demo.
Okay.
They had 3D classics that I think never came out as 3D classics. Like I want to say Yoshi's Island might have been like a little bit of demo of that. There was a DJ Hero 3D made by Vicarious Visions that was demoed there and that game never came out. I'm trying to think of what else, but they just had a lot of
How to Train Your Dragon, the movie.
I think they did have that. And
did that not come out on? Wait, was this like an actual movie?
Yeah,
I think you could actually watch the movie on your 3DS.
Oh, yeah. The follow up to Shrek on Game Boy Advance.
Yes,
hell yes.
And I think some of that, I think you were you weren't necessarily not allowed to film, but I think you weren't allowed to film.
that's a Jared definition. It's not that you're not allowed to film. You're not allowed to film, but you're not allowed to film. Yeah.
You're just pointing a camera and just happen to be recording.
These things happen, you know? Sometimes cameras are on your hand and the lens mm-hmm. just goes places. Sometimes HDMI cords connected to Elgato's slip into the back of a TV and like, you know, who's to say how that happened?
But hey, that's how we can help preserve history. Go support the Video Game History Foundation.
That's what we should do. We should find all the footage Jared has that Nintendo said you're not allowed to post that. And just send it to the Video Game History Foundation and be like, we're not allowed to do anything with this, so here you guys go.
Remind me, here's some demos. I'm going to say it publicly here, so that way people that listen to the show can write in and shame me to do this. John, I need to send you a copy of the Planet GameCube E3 2002 DVD.
Yes, you do. So I can restore it.
Yes. We need to do the 4K restoration of that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Can I
interpolate it up to 60 frames per second too, just to make it really upsetting?
Sure.
yeah.
That might be. I've actually been thinking about like as I'm here mourning the death of E3. I was like, I should just watch that DVD again. And then that's when I was like, no, jackass, you need to send this to John. But there's a couple copies of it. There's bizarrely like I think if you go to eBay right now, there's like a copy listed for $250. So.
Of our DVD?
Yes.
Fuck yeah, send it to me and then I'll sell it. You'll never get it back.
No.
Jeez.
We should send
that to the Video Game History Foundation. Do you think they want it?
I mean, maybe. It might have some footage.
Yeah.
Are you also going to send that Star Fox Zero press copy?
No, that's for me. Send me that with the DVD and I'll send you a regular copy of Star Fox Zero.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I'll send both of those, and you can send me a regular copy of Star Fox Zero
and a blank DVD that just says NWR E3. That way, it's easy to trade.
Yep.
Boy, we spent an hour talking about the first thing on my list of things to talk about.
Well, no, I mean, we talked about two because I guess we kind of explained E3 as you would a child. I guess to wrap that up, children, if you're listening to this, and like how I Met Your Mother, like retrospective that I'm trying to go for here. E3 was really cool and then it got really bad. I hope there's something different that has taken its place that is way more excited to be hyped for.
E4.
And they tried that. It didn't work.
Did they?
Wait, is that for real?
Yeah, it was called E for All. Super Smash Brothers Brawl was playable at it.
Wow. Not E for Everyone? That would have been E5.
Yeah, okay, yeah. It was the Entertainment for All Expo, or E for All, was a public video game trade show created to allow the general public to see and experience new products from the video game industry. It was held in October of 2007. Apparently there was a second one that happened. I didn't even know that.
The real successor to E3 is going to a Six Flags and going to a Nintendo booth where you can play the Wii for the first time.
Dude, those were great. I did when I was in college, I did like a project for a PR class about like doing like a video game company mall tour. I think I actually did it for like, it was like a PlayStation 3 related one, which is hilarious if you think about it. But I did a lot of research into like the success of the Wii mall tours, and it's like, it was an extremely good campaign. Cause it just got cause it is the kind of thing, like you need to put a Wii remote in people's hands and then they get it.
Yeah.
I think they've had different ones over the years, and I mean different systems as well, but I know they've done mall tours. They've done things at, you know, Six Flags and other amusement parks and stuff. I think they've even done like tailgate tours where they'll basically go to different like college campuses for different games. I mean, it's whatever demographic you want to hit, but
yeah,
a well executed tour like that can do very good things for your company.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Twilight Princess fishing at a mall GameStop. Really effective.
I remember, I'm trying to think of, when the Wii, the fall that the Wii came out, I went to college closer to New York City. I wound up going in probably once every week or two to go play all the Wii demos that they had in the Nintendo store. Because once they had them playable, I'm just like, well, yes, I'm going to go play Twilight Princess, you jackasses. Like, I want to play Wii Sports. Let's go. I have very good memories of doing that. It was fun to be excited about video games. Now I'm jaded.
Different time.
Yeah.
Now, pretty eventually your kids will get old enough that you'll get to experience it through fresh eyes.
Yeah, that's why I love Bowser's Fury.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My kid deleted all of my save files again, so we have to start over.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Long. You get to play Bowser's Fury again.
That's the thing, is that like people are like, oh, it's only 3 hours. I'm like, phew, thank God it's only 3 hours. Can I just say Bowser's Fury is the best 3D Mario game I've ever played?
Probably.
I'm not going to fight on it.
It's extremely good.
Like, I haven't decided between that or Sunshine, but if it's not the best, then it's the second best. Like, man, it's good.
It's not necessarily to mean any slander on any other 3D Mario games, because I think that at the end of the day, they're all good, except for Galaxy 2.
Right.
Bowser's Fury is incredible. Odyssey still has the best movement, but Bowser's Fury is just so smartly put together.
Speaking of things that are smartly put together, let's real quick chat about something that's come out kind of in the E3 extravaganza, which is information on the Playdate, which is a black and white, bright yellow handheld with a crank on it.
It is a one-bit screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
It has a D-pad, two buttons, and a mechanical crank.
Yes.
Made by Panic, and they're like an indie publisher, right?
Yeah, I believe they put out Untitled Goose Game.
Yeah, they did.
And this is a subscription-based game system. Well, that's
kind of subscription-based. You get the season with the purchase of the game, but I imagine like season two might be a separate purchase.
That's
questionable.
I mean, I know, John, you kind of expressed like, well, you're going to get one season of it, and that's it.
But, yeah, I don't. Mm-hmm. I think it looks neat, like a neat novelty, but I don't see it lasting beyond its initial explosion.
Yeah, so there Maybe is I'm wrong. A I kind of hope you're wrong, because as I was watching this Playdate Direct or whatever they wound up calling it. I think it was just a Playdate Direct or Playdate update. Yeah, that's better. I think like companies have been trying to shy away from using the direct term, because I think Nintendo might have been like, "Hey guys, yeah, y'all know who did that first, right?" I mean, I do love how all these people like copy the format, but don't get why it works.
What do you mean it can't be 4 hours long and have commercial breaks?
Honestly, this Playdate update was like the closest I've seen to
it was really
the
strong.
Nintendo charm. Yeah,
I will say, so there's, I don't even know what the word like charming tweeness about Playdate, and then I looked up to see where Panic is based. And it's from Portland, Oregon. Mm-hmm. Oregon. Sorry, I'm going to piss off all the Oregonians. but it's from Portland, and it's the most Portlandia shit I've ever heard. Like, this is, if you were to just put, like, whatchamacallit from that from Sleater Keeney and Fred Armisen, like in this video, I wouldn't doubt it. If it's just like it turns out like deep con, this is just like Portlandia season 8 or whatever.
Yeah, the crank is what really sells it.
The crank and the stereo.
The stereo dock.
The stereo dock that you can charge your system. It's also a Bluetooth speaker, and there's a pencil holder. And it comes with a pencil or a pen or something.
I mean, that's good. That's
like
that's above the new 3DS that didn't come with a charger. So like,
everything
that's...
about this is incredibly stupid, but I love it.
It's $179.99, right? Is the costless thing with and that comes with the first season
24 games. There will be 2 a week for 12 weeks.
Depending on the size, depending on the games, that's either a perfectly reasonable price or batshit insane. And I'm not sure it is.
Here's a way that so I do think a lot of these games are going to be more snack sized. But let's say every game is $5 a piece.
Mm-hmm.
Five times that's over $100 of games.
Sure.
And you know, I guess you can also say like you might not like all of them.
Right.
Whatever. But like, let's just say $5 a game, because it seems like there is a kind of almost scope limit to how these things are made.
Yeah.
But that's over $100 of games, and then $80 for the hardware. It doesn't actually sound that preposterous. It's just that, like, I can see if you break it down and you're like, well, what if I only like 5 of the games? Then, like, okay, yeah, that's kind of the risk you run. But once again, part of me, like, I love the concept of this, because I do like the fact that, like, we just only know the names of these games for the most part, and we've seen, like, an image. Like, there's some that we like, the Keita Takahashi game, Kranken's Time Travel Adventure. That's actually been demoed, like that you know a little bit more of.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I do love like Forest Burns : Up in Smoke. That's just the name of a game. Vertex Pop is making, they made Graceful Explosion Machine and Super Crush KO.
Mm-hmm.
They're making a game called Hyper Meteor. I don't know what that is, but I think I want to play it.
Yeah. Sure.
There's Questy Chess from Didako. Sasquatchers. I don't know. That sounds like a game I'd want to play. Zach Gage has a game on it called Snack. Chuhai Labs, everybody's favorite maker of VR games, making a surfing game called Whitewater Wipeout. There's a Bennett Foddy game called Zipper. Like, I don't know what a lot of these games are, but like, I just like the idea of that. Like, I just know that there's a game called Casual Birder that's going to come out on Playdate. I don't know when. But sometime I'll be able to play Casual Birder.
I mean, I'm down to play Recommendation Dog and Executive Golf DX.
Yeah.
That fishing game. I mean, if you're going to have a crank, then a fishing game is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm also excited. But it's also the issue with the price is less the value, but more the sticker shock and barrier of entry. Where it's like, sure, if you break it down, it's $5 per game. It's very easy to get into. But if you're saying, oh, well, you have to buy 24 games at that price, then it's less likely to be like, oh, you know, it's less than $100. I'll just pick that up as an impulse buy or just something to kind of toy around with and see if I like it.
So my thing with it, too, is I actually think the price being maybe a little higher than that might be for the best, because pre-ordering this thing is going to probably be hell on earth.
Yeah.
And I think it would be
absolutely
a lower level of hell if it was $100.
Yeah.
Sure. And a lot of that's more just the environment, and there's like a shortage of chips due to the pandemic.
Yeah. But I'm super excited for this, and I think I'm going to try to pre-order one. That's where I'm at. I had some thoughts about it, and I realized that I'm like, no, like I... And it's also the experience of being a part of the, like, okay, the 2 games for the week got added. What are they?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Definitely playing it during the season is going to be a part of the experience. And I'm not sure if there's like a share function, but there's definitely going to be a zeitgeist around these games if it gets a decent amount of following.
This is just making me want to build a Pico 8 box. Are you guys familiar with Pico 8?
Yeah.
That's what this
just
reminds
barely.
Me of. It's just another like very limited specs thing designed to be played on anything. Though it's all like Windows, Mac, and Linux based, so you just kind of build like a Raspberry Pi or whatever you want to build to play.
Yeah,
it on.
Yeah.
But the stuff that people have done with it is ridiculous. So I mean, that's the thing is if this can cultivate a community like that of developers, but where people are actually paying for the games, then you know that might work. Because I mean, stuff like Pico 8 has a very very active scene of developers making little games for it. So
yeah, people are making like Game Boy homebrew games as well. So
yeah,
there is a market for it. I'm not sure if it's gonna have a mass appeal, but in a world where like handheld game has been reduced to the Switch and your phone, like a return mm-hmm. to more of a Game Boy style of play is really enticing to I think a lot of us.
Yeah,
especially those nostalgic for, you know, games that could be enjoyed in really, really like short bursts and, you know, that the limitations was part of the charm.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's why I'm excited for my Analog Pocket to eventually come in. I mean, I don't know what will come first, the Playdate or the Analog Pocket. I think Analog makes incredible products. I wish they also like knew how to produce them, too, like because it's by the grace of God that I have a Super NT. Very hard to get.
But so before we go, we're already a little long here. But you guys have both been playing some games. I think Neil, you've been playing something a bit more current.
I could talk about mine pretty quickly.
Do yours quick, and then we'll journey over to Alex, who's been on a journey through time.
So this game, there was a surprise release came out last week called Overboard. It is a game from Inkle Studios, which is a company that I've been aware of, but haven't really played any of their games. They came up with a game called 80 Days that I think was pretty good on Switch, and also Heaven's Vault, which I believe Joe DeVader liked a lot when he reviewed it earlier this year. I think it's their first release that came out on every platform at the same time, which, you know, all their other previous Switch games, I think, were ports from iOS and mobile and stuff. But Overboard is a narrative-based game with, like, outsized style, like, just a really cool vibe, as it's you're on a boat sailing across the Atlantic Ocean in the 1930s, and you play this character named Veronica Villainsley. And she's on the boat one night with her husband, Malcolm, and she pushes him overboard. And then,
like you
then
do.
Then she goes to bed and she wakes up, and you're basically playing a time loop game where you need to figure out how to not have anybody finger you for the crime and kind of get somebody else to take the fall, while also making sure that you get the life insurance payout on your husband's death. And have no loose ends. So you just basically go through the day, and you can go to different areas. There's a couple different characters. Like a lot of plot threads start to unravel. And the game does a really cool thing where like it doesn't, I almost wish it did a better job of like a Bomber's Notebook style of keeping track of like, oh, like these actions cause these actions. But it does, like, as you come across things, it'll basically give you like questions that you need to answer. Like, it'll be like, oh, like, why is this person upset? Or, like, how do I, like, I want to uncover the, like, what's this guy's secret? And stuff like that. So it'll give you goals to strive for, which will then, you know, point you in the direction of, like, okay, I'll spend more time shadowing this character to see what they do throughout the day. Or maybe I'll try to, you know, figure out this one angle. And it might lead into failure, where everybody's just like, I saw you push your husband overboard, damn it. And then you go to prison. But then you go back to start the day, and you try again, and you might learn something that'll help you actually get to your end goal. It is incredibly cool. Like a playthrough of it that it will likely end in failure on your first time through. It's probably like a half an hour. And then they kind of get shorter as you go through. And I mean, some might be longer as you kind of go on new paths. But it is an incredibly cool game. And I highly, highly recommend it. It is one of my favorite games of the year so far. And something that, like, I basically, if you just like a clever video game with a cool narrative hook, go check it out. I want to say it's like $10, $15 maybe. I don't think it's that incredibly expensive, and you'll get a really enjoyable like couple of hours out of it. Maybe even more so if you want to try, like, because you kind of can reach a satisfactory end without tying up all the loose ends, where you just basically get away with the money. But then, like, you'll get some, like, it'll be like, oh, like, this person's still suspicious of you. But there is like an end game of figuring out every aspect of it, and it's really cool and worth pursuing.
So, as somebody who's always picking like the goody two shoes choices in video games, like playing as somebody who's trying to get away with murder, how do you feel? Is it like a cartoony sensation, or are you, do they play up the whole evil side of it?
It is very cartoony.
Okay, cool.
Because the whole reason that they have you like play out a little bit. I mean, you don't have any choices in the matter of pushing your husband overboard. And it's even just like, I mean, one, the art style is very like cartoony. Like, it's probably inspired by some kind of artist that I don't know. But very, very stylized. And it's like your husband, you're just like, oh, like look at the dolphins. There's a dolphin there. And then it's like, oh, he looks out over the into the ocean, and then you push him overboard. And then that's something where you have the opportunity, if you are on the deck with people, where you can be like, oh, look at the, you can pick the option of like, look at the dolphins out there, and that'll end up with you pushing them overboard. it is like the whole thing is extremely tongue in cheek. And like, yeah, your character is a villain. That's why her name is Veronica Villainsley. Right. And she's trying to get off the SSS hook. There's a lot of very good puns in all of the names. It's really, really fun and funny.
Nice. Cool.
Alex.
Yep.
Why have you been playing Klonoa?
Because it's a good game, John.
Yo, Klonoa slaps.
What caused this to happen?
Okay, so it's kind of funny that we've been talking about the Playdate and the Analog Pocket, and those handheld, easy to play, nostalgic experiences. Because I've been over the past since like early 2020, rebuilding my Game Boy Advance collection. And I have a modded GBA that has like a backlit screen, but it has the original form factor, which has been really cool. And I've spent like a ton of money on GBA games, and I just got Drill Dozer in today, actually. That one hurt to pay out for, but you know,
how much does it cost now?
Well, it like on price charting, you'll find it for like $100. I got mine for $75, so technically it was a deal.
Is
but
that
like $75?
Card only?
Card only? Yeah, loose.
What the fuck happened? Why am I not selling my copy of Drill Dozer?
So your NWR DVD.
I think I got Drill Dozer for like $5-$10 at a GameStop in college.
Oh, that's brutal to hear.
Because that's what I think. Yeah,
I got Drill Dozer. New for a birthday as a kid. I don't know whatever happened to it. I should find it and sell it.
Yeah, it's a really good game.
There's probably an entire rabbit hole that we could go down, especially with you, John, about like the prices of retro games. But
they're all expensive.
I mean, like the question is the bubble going to pop? And like,
yeah.
How cheap are they gonna?
Oh, they're not going to get like cheap, but they'll go back to closer to where they were in like 2019. So COVID happened. Mm-hmm. Everybody was stuck inside. Everybody rebuilt their Game Boy collection.
Yeah.
And it caused Pokemon Emerald right now, card only, is going for like $150.
Easy. Yeah.
That's nuts.
Yeah. So it's just. And eventually, like, everybody will. Now that we're kind of coming out of that, people will sell all that stuff again, and it'll calm back down. But yeah, no, right now is like the worst time to buy video games. Great time to sell them, though.
True. I did get Metabots and Final Fantasy Tactics for free, so, you know.
There you go.
That kind of helps balance it out, I guess. I got Minish Cap for like $40 before it became $90.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
Do you have Star X yet?
I don't have Star X, and I'm not sure if I ever will.
It's probably still $4. So pick that up.
I have Super Gunstar Heroes. I got that one.
That has some of the right words in it.
Yeah. Does that count? So yeah, as I've been like rebuilding my collection, I've been, you know, also branching out into the games that that were maybe like hidden gems or that I missed. And I was at my local game, like retro game store, and I, you know, they had Klonoa Empire of Dreams. No relation to Empire of Dreams, the Star Wars behind the scenes documentary. But I would say equally as entertaining. Klonoa Empire of Dreams is a puzzle platformer where it's, you know, it's a puzzle platformer. So it's not about like jumping over obstacles or, you know, beating a high score or your time or whatever. But instead it's about using movement and using the tools that you have to, solve a puzzle and move on to the next room. And it's just really well designed and really fun. They're all really, they're bite sized. You know, you can knock out a couple of levels in like 10 minutes. And it's just really fun to control Klonoa. And there's a whole lot of charm with the character designs and the moves, the little enemies that you fight with. It's got one of my favorite things in video games, which is a really, really good double jump. So the way Klonoa works is that he shoots out this little thing called a wind bullet, which inflates the enemies, and they just kind of like hover above you, and you can then use the enemy and double tap A to jump once and then shoot the enemy below you and then jump to a higher platform. And it feels really good to do. And you can like, it gets really creative with how puzzles are solved using that mechanic. And so I moved on from Empire of Dreams to playing the Klonoa Wiimake, as it's been known, the remake of Door to Phantom Isle on PS1. This is a game that came out in 2008 on the Wii. It's just called Klonoa, and it's really charming. It's less puzzly than the GBA games, but it's got this really neat 2.5D perspective, and everything is kind of like a corkscrew where you're just moving around these environments. They're really detailed and nice look, and the music's great. And the story is very simple, but it has some really poignant moments throughout. It's just it's a really solid game.
I can vouch. Been a while since I played it, but I did not know much about Klonoa. Picked it up when it came out on Wii and adored it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It's also one of those short games where, like, I played through it all at once, and then I had inserted the Wii disc into the Wii U just like maybe a couple weeks back, and I played through like a quarter of the game just because, you know, I had the controller sitting there and it sucked me in. And then I've just played Klonoa Dream Champ Tournament on GBA, which is the sequel to Empire of Dreams, which is a similar puzzle platformer. But this one has more detailed art. I would say that the first one, you could kind of tell that the assets were very limited. Maybe just the budget was limited. But still a really, really fun game. And that sequel is like, I would say probably better, especially if you're somebody who likes to try to go for like a perfect ranking. There's a ranking system in Dream Champ Tournament. That's honestly like, as somebody who was trying to do a completionist run on my first run, maybe dampened some of the enjoyment. But once I switched back to just like trying to play it just for fun, it's really, really good. Except for the water levels. Some of the water levels are bad. But yeah, that's been Klonoa. It's a series that I hope gets some more attention. And maybe it will, because I believe there were some earlier rumors this year or last year, Bandai Namco put out a thing for like called something called Klonoa Encore. I think it was just, I forget what it's called. I'm not sure if it's like a copyright or trademark.
So there was Katamari
Damacy. Katamari Damacy, yeah.
That was in Japan. That is Katamari Damacy Encore. It was called Reroll in America. And then there was Mr. Driller, which I don't think, I mean, they didn't give any, because it never came out in America to begin with, but I think that was Mr. Driller GameCube Encore. I forget that.
Yeah.
Game's very good. Check out my review. but they did both of those games. But we, the Colonial one, I think was rumored, and I hope they bring it because like that first game's really good.
It's incredible. Yeah, it's fantastic. And if you are interested in playing the GBA games, they are available on Wii U for like I think $8 each, which is a lot better deal than what I got them for.
Yeah, the Wii U Virtual Console still has a lot of value because like the GBA lineup there is very, very good.
Yeah, Mega Man Battle Network, Advance Wars, Fire Emblem, Golden Sun.
Two Metroids. The Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, the Castlevania games.
Yeah, Metroid Zero Mission this
Mario
year as well.
Mario Golf.
Yeah. Mario Golf. Yeah,
Mario Golf is there too.
So many great games on the GBA. So many.
Yeah. I will hopefully get some kind of way to play them on my Analog Pocket because that's part of the reason why I'm getting the Analog Pocket.
If it ever shows up.
Yeah.
If it's real. Well, with that,
I think that's a show.
I think we'll call that an episode. Neil, you made it through the entire episode.
I did. So I'm going to have to leave very quickly after recording, but I made it all the way through.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, Alex. We may see you again in the weeks to come, as I'm sure Neil will be occasionally busy.
I might show up, but I feel like having another person here in case I have to go be a dad.
I'm totally cool with being the backup guy.
Just so I don't have to monologue.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening.
It's going to be hard keeping me away from talking about E3 next week. Especially the Nintendo Direct.
Yeah.
Oh, well, yeah.
You are on deck if Breath of the Wild 2 trailer happens, we are legally required to do a deep dive. So
I'll hold two kids in my arm and
translate more Hylian.
Yeah. Oh, God. It was Gerudo, technically.
Crap. My bad.
Thank you very much for listening. If you would like to send us some listener mail, I think we might have some outstanding stuff that we didn't get to today, but we will get to it. Send it to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com. You can also follow us on Twitter and ask us questions there at connectivitynwr on Twitter. That's all we got. Thank you guys for joining us. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next time. Bye.
Bye. Adios.
This was made possible by our generous supporters on Patreon. Check out patreon.com/NWR for all the details.